This is Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Sumich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN, hour number two, Sirius Channel 158, our very own VSiN Watch app. Of course, terrestrial station across this great country of ours. Mike, we get some people that like to chime in every now and then. And Coach Harry Ellis has tweeted in to us. And he says, since being bit by a spider, Patrick Corbin has allowed two runs or less through five innings in eight straight starts. All right. I have no idea if there's any truth to that whatsoever or not. No clue. Yeah. But
little Spider-Man action there.
Yeah. So
we just, got
again. Got I'm not saying
Colby's
that's true.
Burner tweeting in.
Oh, really?
We have Colby's Burner tweeting in too. Mustache icon.
Oh,
on
yeah. Yes.
Found team total under bases props on the BetMGM tab as well. So you can find team total bases over on BetMGM according to Mustache icon, who I can only assume is Colby's Burner account.
Yeah. And we trust all the Twitter accounts. So everything that we read here is definitely fact. Yeah, everything we read here is definitely fact and is definitely true. So I have no idea if Patrick Corbin got bit by a spider and he's really only allowed to. I have no idea. Do you think that's real? There's no way that's true.
I want it to be true.
Yeah, well, Coach Harry Ellis, if you're just pulling our leg, you win. You got it red on air. So there you go.
Touché.
You win. We do have game six this evening. Pacers trying to get to the NBA Finals. They can close this thing out as they lead 3-2 right now. Mike, I told you about, as soon as we looked earlier, there was a flash on the screen. It had gone to 4.5 at MGM in favor of Indiana. What I didn't mention is on break, there was also another flash. And at ESPN, it had gone to 3.5. So there is 1 3.5 and 1 4.5 out there in the market, and everybody else is sitting at 4. So a little bit of money on one side at one book, a little bit of money on another side at the other book, and everybody else standing pat at the 4.
Yeah, interesting that we're seeing competing numbers there, competing moves. We've talked about ESPN before in the past. They do seem like they go a little bit out there in some of these situations where they want to be the book that is the outlier. Now, I don't know if that's because they're getting bigger bets on certain sides and then deciding, okay, we need to make the adjustments according to it. But it is interesting that they are, again, the rogue book out there at 3.5. I talked about this one in the opening segment, Matt. I don't have a bet in here yet. If I bet this, I'm going to be playing Indiana alts. The more I think about it, the more I look at it, I think there is a real world here where the Pacers just blow the Knicks out of this spot. They come out, play well, and we don't see that pushback from New York here. If you want to play Pacers minus 9.5, it's plus 205. If you want to play Pacers minus 14.5, it's 4-1. I would rather take a chance in this game with outliers than I would just the money line or the spread, because I do think that the bell curve of results is pretty wide in this space. I do think you could see it blowouts from both teams. I don't even hate the idea of trying to take the Knicks on an alt number if you do like the Knicks in this spot. So I'm going to be playing more aggressively here with some alt prices versus trying to just play the 4 or trying to play the money line.
Yeah, so I think there's multiple ways. I'm going to not take this from a what am I doing standpoint and do this from a let's talk through how you can bet this game standpoint, right, Mike? And so if you like the Knicks in this thing, I'm inclined to say maybe you put 75% of your bet on the plus 4 and then maybe a quarter of your bet on the money line as well, because I'm with you in the thought process that, hey, if this thing is close, that probably means the Pacers aren't playing all that great, because when we've seen the Pacers play good, they've really just dominated this Knicks team. They've looked like the better team from almost start to finish in these games. And so I'm with you on that it's kind of like, maybe it's just a money line play on the Knicks. Maybe it is a Knicks even minus 2 or something to get a little bit more plus money in that if you do like the Knicks side of things. Because again, if this game is close, it's probably because Indiana is playing poorly.
Yeah, I agree. It's their role players are struggling once again, right? And if that's the case, then the Knicks are very much alive in this game and alive in the series, by the way, Matt, because you can get 3-1 right now and the Knicks come back in the series. if I'm looking at playing the Knicks at minus, you know, or plus 140, plus 150, plus 160, somewhere in that range on the money line, I'm probably sprinkling the Knicks to win the series because they're going to be decent favorites heading back to Madison Square Garden for game seven as well. It'll be a tough spot for the Pacers. Try to go on the road with those role players and get the job done. So again, it's extreme outcomes for me, right? It's Knicks to win the series. It's Pacers minus 14 and a half. Those are the type of bets that I am trying to place depending on where your opinion is. So if you like the Pacers, lay alts. If you like the Knicks, take them to win the series for a little bit. Try and take some shots here because I do think, again, the range of outcomes is pretty wide in this game tonight.
So I did play one prop in this thing. I played Aaron Nesmith over 11 and a half points. Mike, he's off the injury report. If you listen to him, yeah, he says the ankle doesn't feel great, but it's no excuse for anything. Again, they left him off of the injury report for the game. I know this time of year, NBA injury reports are whatever you want to make of them. They're not very reliable, but I think the 11 and a half points is a depressed price on a home favorite in the Pacers, because you look at him and in the games in which they do well, they are projected to do well, or they're 4-point favorite. They're projected to win the series and close this thing out tonight. He has gone way over this 11 and a half total. It's the bad games in which he has gone under. He's putting up the shots as well. Even in this past game, he shot 8 times in only 16 minutes of play. He just didn't make anything. And then they sat everybody, and they just kind of waved the white flag there against the Knicks. I think you get the full complement of minutes tonight. He's going to be on the good drugs. He's not even going to feel that ankle. And, 11 and a half, I think, again, if we had seen a good game from him last time out, I think we're probably looking 12 and a half, 13 and a half on the prop line here for him. And so I think 11 and a half is a little bit of a bargain, and I just have to believe what he says, in which, yeah, you know, it doesn't feel great, but it's not that big of a deal, and I'm going to be out there. So I'm listening to the player himself. Maybe he's hurt worse than he's leading on, but give me the over 11 and a half on Nesmith.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this would be a different number if you saw a better performance there in the last game in New York. So I don't hate the handicap here to get there. I don't really know who's going to score for the Pacers. It's been one of the struggles in this series when I'm looking at some of these props, is you have big games from Siakam, you have big games from Halliburton, you have a big Nesmith game in the series. So it seems like different people are stepping up. Again, that plays toward the Pacers winning at home because they're more likely to have people step up in this spot. So it's tough for me to try and get involved in any of those specific props for the Pacers. If I was playing anybody points over, it's Towns for me. To me, it feels like Towns has a great matchup here. We saw Miles Turner struggle more on the defensive side in game 5 there in New York.
It was
It's
like Towns figured out he was big, and he's like, oh, I can get down low and just get fouled. Why did it take him 4 games to figure out he's big? It's like, yeah, man, you're bigger than most of these dudes. Go down there and just get fouled, you know?
Well, he was scoring even without doing that. Yeah. Then you add that into his game, and all of a sudden the points coming in bunches there. He's sitting at 22 and a half tonight. If I was playing any player prop tonight, it'd be Towns over 22 and a half points.
So going back to the, hey, listen, not necessarily what I'm betting, but let's talk through all angles of this thing. We mentioned this at the top of the show if you're just joining us. From a total perspective, I think if you like the over, then you probably also have to like the Pacers. I think if you like the under, then you probably also have to be looking on the Knicks side. We've seen what the Knicks do well. When the Knicks do well, we see what it is. They're picking the Pacers up at half court. They're trying to slow them down a little bit. They're making sure that they are trying to get them out of their rhythm, out of their flow of just getting up and down the court. And they want to slow this thing down, Mike. And then, you know, we've seen too, the games in which the Pacers do well, it's flying over the total. They're scoring at will. They're getting fouled a ton as well. They're attacking Brunson. They're attacking Cat because they are weaker on the defensive side. And so I do believe there's correlation here in this as well. Now, one of the things we mentioned at the top as well was you could just take the Knicks out of play here and just play the Pacers team total over if you like the Pacers as well. And so that I also think is correlated. I don't think the Pacers win a low scoring game. I think that's not what they want to be doing here.
Yeah, I have not put a parlay together yet with the alts on the Pacers and over their team total of 113 and a half. I probably am doing that if I am playing alts, because there is no way that even if you like the Pacers minus 4, I would split your bet up. Half of it on Pacers minus 4, half of it over on the team total, because they're most likely not covering the minus 4 if they don't go over their team total anyway. And there are worlds where they go over their team total and they don't cover the four. Mm-hmm. So you're able to get your money back in that scenario as well. So it's almost like one of those partial hedges where I believe that this is a Pacers team that scores if they win tonight. I don't think this is a game where the Pacers win 101-96, Matt. I think this is one of those where if the Pacers win this game, it's 122 to something, right? And that kind of allows you to go over the team total and still have some coverage if you do see a solid Knicks performance in the offensive end.
And then all we're really doing here is caring about the Eastern Conference for this next game or two. And then it's like, then the Thunder win in five, right? I mean, it's like gentlemen sweep. Yeah. They would be minus 700 against the Knicks. They'd be minus 800 against the Pacers.
Yeah, they're minus 750 right now in the market. And I wouldn't tell you not to bet it if you had that type of bankroll where that you're willing to put that type of money down. I think minus 750 is about a fair price. In this spot here. So if you like the Thunder, go for it. The time to bet the Thunder, I talked about this before this conference finals round, they were minus 145 to win the title. Now you're seeing them as high as minus 750 here before we have an opponent.
I guess our only thing, and we always like to give the whole alternate, you know, angle of betting, it would be minus 700, minus 800, minus 750, something like that. If you bet the Thunder, Shea to win finals MVP is minus 575. Is there a world that exists in which they win this series, Mike, and it's not Shea? I mean, I think it's less than 5% of the time. So you could save a few bucks by just doing that.
I have to do the math because it's Williams or Holmgren, who are the next two OKC players, who are 40-1 and 75-1. You may be able to bet all three and get a better price than minus 750. I'd have to do the math around it and figure that out. But there's a world. When you're laying 700 or you're laying 575, I'll just lay the 700 in a lot of cases because I'm that confident the team is going to win.
Yeah.
But that to me is a math equation. Like, can you get a better overall price by taking those three to win the finals MVP than the series?
Reminder, first pitch coming Reds and the Cubs in about, 8 minutes or so, something like that. Nick Lodolo for the Reds, Drew Pomeranz for the Cubs. Minus 175 Cubs at home, plus 145 Reds on the road as dogs. A flat seven because we are getting those 10-11 mile an hour winds blowing in at Wrigley. Guys, peer to peer is a new way people are betting out there, and ProfitX is going to allow you to do that. Go in, download the ProfitX app. You're betting against guys like me and Mike. Use the promo code VEASAN for up to $200 in profit cash.
Welcome back to Ready Set Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VEASAN, the sports betting network.
Ready Set Bet here on VEASAN, Matt Brown and Mike Somich. Shout out to Coach Harry Ellis, also Justin Edwards, both letting us know on the Twitter machine, Mike, that he was not lying, this whole spider thing and Patrick Corbin. There's an article is linked there as well. So this is a true thing. Bet against this, if you will.
I'm going to go out and get a spider bite this week so that my golf game improves, Matt. You won't know what hit you.
How do you feel about spiders in general?
I don't mind them. Don't really love them, but don't mind them. Never would consider. I would get a snake as a pet before a spider.
So snake, spiders, neither one bother you all that much?
No, not that much.
Yeah. Traumatic experience with a snake for me when I was a child, which led me to hate snakes very much. Like I lived in Louisiana. I lived on a decent sized little piece of land kind of out in the country outside of the city limits. And I'm dragging the garbage can to the road one day. And like, I kind of hear this like dunk, dunk. And I was, kind of like thinking, and I stopped and I looked down and I had just run over a snake that I had stepped over, fortunately, and didn't step on, and then went dunk, dunk and whatever. And it turned out to be a friggin' water moccasin. Like it was an actual poisonous snake that had I stepped on it, who knows, maybe I wouldn't be here today. Maybe it would just be like RIP Matt, you know?
Well, I mean, if you ran it over with a garbage can and I'm assuming it then just slithered away, didn't attack you, I think you would have been okay. I'm gonna take Matt's okay.
I got the friendly water moccasin, is what you're saying? Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. I had a little nice guy. We'll see what Aaron thinks about this. Join us here on the Progressive Guest Line, Aaron Halterman from Racing Dudes. You've seen him also with Mike over on the YouTube channel talking all things horse racing. Aaron, snake, spiders, where do you sit on these things? Oh boy,
afraid of snakes. Spiders, you know what? If they're small, they don't bother me at all. If those like those large spiders, forget about it. I don't want to mess with those. But snakes, 100%. I'm out on any kind of snake. I think every snake is a deadly snake.
Yeah, exactly. Snakes no good whatsoever. Everybody's like, oh dude, tarantulas, they're friendly, they're cool, don't worry about them. Like, it's a giant hairy spider. Like, no thanks, man. I'm out on that. Like, no. I know these people.
The hairy
just let them,
part.
Yeah.
The hairy part bothers me. Like the hairy spider thing, no thanks. Hard pass.
Yeah, that spider has inside of him, and he can grow more hair than I can on this thing. Like, damn spider has the ability to grow more hair than I do. No thanks. I'm not doing that. I'm out on the spider with all of that. So you guys, I think whenever I was out, y'all did a Stanley Cup draft, and so I want to go back and just, I guess, is this embarrass one of the two of you, or are we good here on all of this? I mean, I think that Mike's first round pick of the Golden Knights didn't work out too well.
No, it didn't. It did not work out well. I'm happy with the second and third picks I took, where I just said, hey, the winner of Lightning Panthers is winning the East. That worked out pretty well for me. We're both fading the Oilers. Like I said, I've been wrong about the Oilers this entire playoff run. They've been out. They're way ahead of their skis from a what they have done with a on the ice play versus talent perspective, but it's hard to really knock them at this point because they have been able to overcome that tougher Western Conference.
Aaron, how do you feel about your draft in retrospect?
Not great at all. Look at the first pick, the Colorado Avalanche. That was great. They were out in the very first round, so that was very good. No, horrible draft for me. I will say I am proud that I picked the Maple Leafs because I do think the Maple Leafs were the second best team in the East. And while they only made the second round, still, I thought, you know what, you look back at that series and go, man, they could have won that. And then, boy, you're looking like, boy, that was a really good pick. So, but that was the fifth pick, and that was, I'm pretty sure I said that day, I'm never betting the Maple Leafs. Yeah. I got to pick somebody here, so yeah. I'll pick them. But it's embarrassing that neither one of us drafted the Oilers, looking back at it. That's terrible.
Well, I can tell you one thing that you should feel pretty good about is y'all's NBA title draft that you did, in which you at least do have the Thunder, and you got that actually is your second pick. So good on you there with that one. Also have the Knicks in your portfolio. So definitely put it to Mike there on that one.
Well, for sure. And when that happened that day, Samich made a really stupid thing. He drafted the Cavs and the Clippers and then let me have the Thunder with the fourth pick. And again, you could go back and say, Samich, that was incredibly dumb. I don't know what you were doing. I said it on air that day. And then, like I said, I'm not going to brag on the Knicks too much because I'm pretty sure both of us, Mike, were like, okay, yeah, we're going to take these teams with our fourth and fifth picks, but we're not betting these teams, right? We just have to draft somebody. The Knicks, I think I said, hey, you know, they beat teams that are terrible, so maybe they'll win a round or something like that. And then it turns out, like, the Pistons probably should have beat them in that first round. They just weren't experienced enough. So, yeah, I guess I'll brag on that, but that was more of Samich. That was not smart.
Yeah, I got cute and took the Clippers over the Thunder because I love the Clippers at the start of this playoffs. I'm like, I'll take a 25-1 shot and go price hunting instead of +165. Hindsight, I should just done the whole COA aspect of it, just cover myself and taking the Thunder. But hey, what are you gonna do? Gotta have some fun.
Aaron, we got a game tonight, and this is currently out there. I mean, again, if you have access to ESPN Bet, wherever you are out there, you can find a 3.5 on Indiana. And again, all the way up to 4.5 at MGM, sitting 4 mainly at most of the other national books out there. How do you see this one going tonight?
Yeah, I'm surprised by the line. I thought it would be a little bit more. I just feel like the Pacers have been the better team for most of this series. So I would happily take, I had 4.5 is what I saw, but I would definitely take 4 or 3.5 as well. And that would be just fine. I just feel like, you know, Game 5, I kind of saw that coming. The Knicks have had a really nice run here. You know, whether you love the Knicks or hate the Knicks, they've been really tough in this postseason. I just didn't feel like that was going to end at home. I thought they would show up and play a great game, and they did. But we've seen this in the NBA playoffs all year. When it flips and you go back home, all of a sudden those role players for the home team, they just seem to play a lot better. And I think that's what's going to happen with Indiana tonight. And again, I just feel like they've been the better team. You know, I don't think it's a huge mismatch, but you watch most of those games and you go, you know what, Indiana's been better. In game three, the game they lost at home, they really had that thing under wraps and they would have covered a spread like 4.5 that you see in game six tonight. And then they did what the Knicks did in game one and just absolutely blew it. But long story short, I think Indiana covers this game. I don't expect this to be all that competitive tonight. I think the Pacers win it pretty easily.
Yeah, I've been talking about Pacers alt numbers. You can get Pacers minus 9.5 plus 200. You can get Pacers minus 14.5 plus 400. I don't hate going after that because I do think there is a wide range of outcomes here, and a lot of those include a Pacers blowout. Now, we've got the Florida-Edmonton series. I know that we were on Florida pretty heavily against Carolina, and they were minus 110 to open that series. We're seeing minus 110 both ways in this series, which would imply that Edmonton would have been minus 110 against Carolina, which we know is not true. Who do you like here in the Stanley Cup Finals? How are you betting this one?
Yeah, I've been back and forth, and you and I have been on the same page, as was shows with our fantasy draft where we whiffed on the Oilers there. I haven't ever believed in them. Now, I will say they have made me a believer now, talking with Edmonton. I mean, the Vegas series, they were super impressive, but I blame that more on Vegas. And then the Dallas series, they came back and they're super impressive again. And I'm like, okay, wait a second. All these teams that are playing Edmonton, they're not just not showing up, right? I mean, the Edmonton's doing something to make this happen. And the thing they've done, they've been able to shut down the other team and shut down the other team's top lines as well. So it's been impressive. However, all that being said, I still just trust Florida a little bit more in this series. I think they're a deeper team. I think they've got a deeper defensive core as well. And I trust Bravosky over Skinner. I will say, though, Skinner is playing awfully well. But still, I do trust the Florida Panthers just a little bit more. And I think the Panthers having four elite lines, and I really say that and mean it, four lines that you put them out there and they really look the same. They all can score. They're all dangerous. I do think that'll eventually kind of break up what Edmonton's been able to do defensively and stopping some of these other teams. I think it's going to be a classic. I think we're going six or seven games, but I'm going to lean towards Florida one more time. And I'll do what I did when I bet Dallas and when I bet Vegas and buy out of the thing if I see Edmonton start to dominate the series like they did against those two teams.
I'm talking to Aaron Halterman from Racing Dudes. Aaron, let's head over to the Diamond, Royals and the Tigers. It is Tarek Skubal Day over there for the Tigers. How are you going to bet this team?
Yeah, I'm going to go under the 3.5 here for the first five in this game. And to me, it's like I watch the Royals a lot. I'm in Missouri, so I do watch the Royals quite a bit. It's a very top-heavy lineup. First three or four guys that line up, very good. The next five, not so good. So I think it's a horrible matchup. I think Skubal will be able to shut them down in this spot. And you look at the Royals with Waka on the mound. He's been surprisingly good, especially at home, especially through four or five innings, which is all I'm going to care about today, right? So I'm going to lean with the under in this spot. I think it makes a lot of sense to play the under here. Obviously, Skubal on the mound, but the matchup, he should be able to overpower a lot of the Royals hitters.
Give us 30 seconds on Yankees-Dodgers.
To me, I'm going to go over the total for the full game of 9.5. I feel like it's two very average pitchers. And I think we saw it last night with this series. I think these hitters are going to lock in because this feels it's not postseason baseball, but it feels a little different than just a run of the mill regular season when these two teams get together. So I think the hitters will lock in. They'll focus. And I think both pitchers are in trouble tonight.
He's Aaron Halterman. Find him right here on the network with us as well as over on Racing Dudes. Aaron, appreciate it and good luck.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Mike, we got Pacers minus 4 with him. We got Florida on the series. We got an under 3.5 in the first five Royals and Tigers, and then an over in that Yankees and Dodgers game.
Yeah, I don't hate the over. That was another one I looked at a long time. It didn't end up getting in the account there. I like the Tigers more than the under first five, but I see where he's going with that one, too.
When we come back, an interesting little quote here from one of the Browns beat writers.
Set Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set Bet here on VSIN. Matt Brown, Mike Somich. Mike, we said, you know, Lodolo can always be fun.
Yep.
Three pitches into the game, there were runners on first and second for the Cubs. First pitch of the game gets doubled, then a ball, then a hit by pitch. He did get Seiya Suzuki to pop up. So Cubs first and second with one out there in the first inning against the Reds. So we said it can always be an adventure with Lodolo on the mound.
It can. And this is the struggle here with the wind blowing in. We talked about how that pushed the total down first five as well as full game. It's like you still have two pitchers that can blow up on the mound for both these teams. And so it's hard to be able to still be confident and go in the under there when you don't have, you know, such a paltry number. Seven's not a lot in a baseball game. And yes, the wind's blowing in, but man, Lodolo can be good for five on his own any day of the week, any inning of the week. And that's where it gets scary.
I teased before we went to break an interesting little thing coming through here from one of the Browns beat writers, Zach Jackson, over there. Mike wrote an article just talking about the quarterback room in general for the Browns, but this quote really stood out to me, in which he said, from watching, Dylan Gabriel does not look like an NFL quarterback to me, is what he said there in that one, which you and I obviously were very surprised that that was the choice for the Browns whenever it came around to them, and even more surprised when they backed it up by taking Shador Sanders a little bit later. But Dylan Gabriel, I don't think either one of us thought was going to be anything more than, hey, he's probably like a solid QB3. He's, you know, go in there, run the scout team every now and then, get activated. He's like a lifelong backup type of guy. And instead they take him before Shador Sanders and then start all this drama and controversy as to who's going to take the snaps for the Browns in the upcoming season. And here we go with a beat writer who's saying this guy didn't even look like an NFL quarterback.
I mean, honestly, he feels like Chase Daniels light, right? Mm-hmm. Someone who could make a bunch of money being a backup, carrying a clipboard for a while. And like you said, third team scout team, I think that fits for them. I was surprised when they took him. I thought there were better quarterbacks on the board, irregardless of how you feel about Shador Sanders. I thought there were better quarterbacks not named Shador Sanders on the board than Dylan Gabriel, that third round pick. I think this kind of speaks into existence why we have Shador Sanders Rookie of the Year tickets in our account. I do think Shador takes the first snap for this team. I think he ends up winning the job during camp. And I think that that's the quarterback for as long as he can be for that Cleveland Browns team.
Mike, you and I came up through poker. And yes, we typically, you know, the majority of the time we're going to talk sports betting here on this program. But the 56th annual World Series of Poker is now going on over there on the Las Vegas Strip. And yes, it is on the Strip, no longer at the Rio down there at Paris and Bally's. The reason I bring this up is because it runs now until the middle of July. And I'm wondering if the timing of the announcement of the $100,000 Survivor wasn't calculated a little bit more than we thought, because who is coming to town for the next 6 weeks? By the way, if you look at the schedule for the World Series, and I don't know if you have yet or not, Mike, but there are numerous 25K buy-ins, multiple 50K buy-ins. There are three different 100K buy-ins. There is even a 250K buy-in tournament on the schedule for the World Series this week. And so 100K buy-in for Survivor, somebody runs hot, somebody gets a couple cashes. Maybe it's just high roller gamblers in the first place coming to town for all of that. So I'm wondering what the signups are going to look like between now and the middle of July when these guys start heading out of town.
I would say it's a important stretch here for Circa if you want to get to 30 signups, right? Mm-hmm. Inside that $100,000 Survivor, because you do have people who are willing to shell out that type of money and be able to get into contests like this. And so the timing is good. I think it was important for Circa to announce this before the World Series of Poker. And it's been interesting. You know, we both played poker professionally for a little bit. It's been interesting to follow the poker market and what's happened. You see tournament series like the Triton tournament where you've got these monster buy-ins. That's become one of the main ways that people are making a living at the top end of poker now, is playing in these really high buy-in events against the best of the best in the world, but shortening the pool size down. So you have 30, 40, 50 people in these events versus 10,000 people in the main event, which, yes, there's a huge top prize, but you've got to wade through a bunch of situations where you're going to need to get lucky. You're going to need to win coin flips. You're going to need to win every one of your 70-30s if you're going to be able to win that tournament, where you're able to play a little bit more in these larger buy-in events. And so I do think it's interesting the timing of the announcement that we're going to have this 100K Survivor when you've got the World Series there. I do think it's a smart move by Circa to try and capture that market, which is not adverse to putting up $100,000 at a time.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you know, you would think everybody in the gambling world would have heard about it, but maybe we need to go over there and just, you know, walk through the tournament room during one of these 100K buy-ins and just let everybody know about that if they want to really gamble things up out there. But Mike, there's a 250 on the schedule this week. I know there's $1 million buy-in. It was the one drop tournament. It was a kind of novelty deal, but I mean, this is like multiple 100K buy-ins, multiple 50K buy-ins, multiple 25K buy-ins, even a 250K buy-in on the schedule this year.
So do you think if we go over there, set up a booth and take signups, Derek will give us a piece of everyone who signs up, just a little bit of a little bit of a sprinkle, if we're able to increase the number of signups over there by creating some marketing opportunities?
So the rake, the no rake contest that they literally just like scream and yell about, like the rake is actually to me and you. Like we're the rake.
Yes.
Matt and Mike are the rake. Yeah, that's fine.
I see no problem in this.
Me neither. I'll take some rake, man. Like seriously. I think a few of those dudes are going to walk over here and sign up. Now that I think about it, I mean, like, I think a few of those dudes will come over here and give it a whirl. You know, I mean, look, at the end of the day, you can bust out of a poker tournament in 30 minutes. You hope you're not out of this thing in week one, right? I mean, like, you can
bust out a Survivor in 3.5 hours, if that. It's not hard.
You can, but you're hoping you're getting multiple weeks out of this thing, you know?
You are. You also have a group of people that are used to having percentages of each other in poker tournaments together to talk about that. It's going to be something people talk about at the table. I wouldn't be shocked if we see, you know, 2, 3, 4 poker players join up to play entries as well because they are talking about it while they're at the table.
I want to circle back around to some of these games that are getting going here a little bit later. We got the Red Sox and the Braves, Walker Buehler and Spencer Schwellenbach, and you are looking at a prop there in that one.
Yeah, we talked about the weather here, wind blowing out. It's very good hitting conditions, warmer weather there. Rafael Devers, and this is something that Colby mentioned as well, he just is set up to be able to hit Spencer Schwellenbach here. He's 2 for 5 with 2 homers. The wind's blowing out to left, which is where he wants to be hitting it. You can catch Devers at +130 for an RBI. So give me Devers +130 to get an RBI today against the Braves.
We said anytime Tarek Skubal is on the hill, you got to look at alternate ways to try to bet this Tigers team. And oh, by the way, Mike, that is now up to -192 in that game. So it has gone up since we have been on air. People are looking going, oh yeah, it's Skubal. I should bet him. Actually, it's everybody putting them in every single money line parlay that is happening today. Like that's actually what's going on in moving this number. So you're going to look at this thing to play it alternate.
Yeah, I'll lay the 1.5 for the Tigers here. I don't love laying a 1.5, especially with home teams. I'm much more willing to do it with the road teams where you're guaranteed the 9 at bats. This is a Tigers team, which when you look at their numbers
on the road, you got that going for you.
Yes. Yeah. So you get that full 9 at bats, and the numbers against Waka are pretty good for this Tigers team. 291 average and 127 at bats, 12 additional walks there. So they have gotten to him. Skubal on the other side has 42 Ks and 132 at bats against this lineup for the Royals. So we know that he is going to be able to strike batters out. It's a positive matchup for Skubal. I think it's a negative to neutral matchup here for Waka. I'll lay the 1.5 here with the Tigers -110.
We do have another game, but this is more some news that just came through that I want to talk about here in this one. The Rays and the Astros, Zach Littell, Colton Gordon going there for the Astros. This Astros pitching staff needs some help badly there, dealing with the tons of injuries here. Yeah. -130.
Looks like my fantasy team.
Yeah. -130 for the Astros at home here in this one. Rays are +110 on the road, 8.5. But Yordan Alvarez, we got some Yordan Alvarez news.
Yeah, he apparently has a broken hand here. No timetable set for his return, but that's a pretty big loss for an Astros lineup that was, it seemed like they were starting to get hot. It seemed like this was an Astros team that was starting to make their yearly run as the weather gets warmer and able to try and chase down this Mariners team. Now losing one of the better bats in their lineup for what looks like to be an extended period of time.
Guys, we got that splits page over on VSiN.com. If you are not already a VSiN Pro subscriber, we'll let you dip your toe in for $9.99. So you can come in for the first month. You can see what everything is all about. And we know you love that splits page. You can see what's going on over at DraftKings. You can see what's going on over at Circa. You can compare, you can contrast, you can see the big national book that's in a ton of states. And then also the book that takes big money from sharper players out there. So VSiN.com/subscribe, as little as $9.99 for your first month. If you want to check all of that stuff out there on the splits page, you know, we know you love it. We know you love it. So go ahead. It's only $10. Mike, you're coming out here a couple of different times. You're going to try to get into a World Series event. What you going to do? You going to fire a little bit?
I have not looked at the schedule. See, the timing would have to set up. Maybe we play a Sunday afternoon tournament together, Matt.
Yeah.
We can find one like, you know, the 1,000, 1,500 buy-ins. It's a one-dayer that we can jump in Sunday. Maybe I end up saying to Monday because I'm at the final table, you know, something like that.
There's some juicy online ones.
Shout out to Poker Go. What's that?
There's some juicy online ones because they just added Pennsylvania into the player pool now too. So now Nevada is pooled with Pennsylvania and Michigan and New Jersey. So tournaments are a little bit more juicy.
I did play a tournament last year. I played the $1,000 PLO last year online after qualifying for $50 when I was up there. So I'll look at the online ones as well. Maybe we can make something happen.
Yeah, we'll see if we can. Whatever, you and I will sit in a dark room. drink some whiskey, some tequila, and see if we can take home a bracelet. Let's talk some MMA with Kyle Anthony when we come back.
Set Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Matt Brown, Mike Somich back here on VSiN on a Saturday. Mike, Lodolo makes it out of the first inning. He gets the pop-up and the ground into double play. So despite the fact two runners on after three pitches, does no damage there in that one. And actually, Gussie got a strikeout here in this one. So it looks like they're going to get through two innings here pretty clean. So it's just, you know, again, it's the roller coaster that is Nick Lodolo.
You always want him to pitch well because you know the upside is there. You just, and you see the flashes still. You just don't see the consistency that you need from someone. And him and Hunter Green, they were supposed to be awesome, like perennial Cy Young contenders. And it just has not played out for the Reds in that manner.
You and I have to bet these or whatever. If this was, you know, if there was a little bit more fantasy focus on this show, if this was a fantasy sports channel or something like that, like Lodolo is a guy that we could give out from a DFS perspective and feel okay about it, but just not from a betting perspective. Because, you know, you can make several lineups in DFS, right? You throw him in one of the lineups. If he blows up, oh, well, he's not in your second lineup, but we can't do that betting.
Well, and the upside is there, right? Mm. I mean, he could be one of those cheap guys that goes out and strikes out nine and goes eight innings. Mm. He could also go one and a third and give up eight runs. And so it's, that's almost a good guy to have in those DFS lineups because it gives you the upside. And yeah, like you said, if he blows up, he blows up. On to the next.
No big deal. Now joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line, Kyle Anthony, MMA handicapper from Wager Talk. You can find him on MSG Network as well. And Kyle Anthony UFC over on the Twitter machine. Kyle, how you doing, buddy?
Good, man. Good. It's another UFC card. Not the biggest names that we're going to have on here, but we're always looking for that betting angle. And I think we got a few this weekend.
Yeah, I got a fight night here happening down the street for me over at the UFC Apex. By the way, a very underrated place to catch a fight if anyone's ever in town and wants to go in. Smaller venue, but still enough seats to feel some energy and stuff like that. It's an underrated place to go and watch a fight for sure. Main event, Aaron Blanchfield, Macy Barber. This is Aaron Blanchfield as a decent favorite here in this one. How do you see this fight playing out?
Yeah, this is an interesting one here. You've got two females, 26, 27 years old, both rising talents within the UFC. And when you look at really what Aaron Blanchfield does, you know, her big thing is going to be wrestling. She's going to look for takedowns, going to look to push that pace, get in your face, you know, rinse and repeat. That's pretty much what she's going to be looking to do. When you look at this fight here, you know, and especially at this price of around minus 245, roughly around there, you know, her wrestling is her main weapon, but she hasn't really found that much success with it. You know, yes, most recently she went out there and she beat Rose Namajunas. She was 2-for-8 on takedowns with 8 minutes of control time. But the thing there was a nice setup for Blanchfield overall. She was able to go out there, get the takedowns. And, you know, you have Rose who just really isn't that, has that physicality, that strength overall. But you look really further back over the last six fights for Blanchfield, you know, she hasn't found that much success with the wrestling. She's 4-for-33 on takedowns. And I think that is kind of a red flag here in this spot. And you have to kind of go back pretty far back to 2021 was the last time prior to the Rose Namajunas fight where she had two or more takedowns. That was against Miranda Maverick back in 2021. So I just think that this is a spot here where you've got a lot of the physicality on the Barber side. She's big. I think that she's able to kind of muscle out of some of those situations here. And we've even seen her, even when she's been taken down, she has the ability to get back to her feet. She can create the space. She can scramble and she can kind of bully her way out of those spots. And if this does play out on the feet, which I do think, yes, there's going to be some opportunity for Blanche to get the takedowns, but I think that you can see Barber pushing forward, having the better striking, more technical striking overall, having the harder hitter between the two. And I think she can keep Blanchfield on that back foot. And when she does that, I think there's going to be a lot of equity here when you're talking about a plus 200 number here on Barber. I think this number should be a little bit closer here. I think it's a little bit wide, and I think there's value on the dog here.
Now, right now, Blanchfield and Barber, the over 4.5 rounds, minus 200. So pretty heavily juiced to go the distance here. What fighter do you think that benefits if we do see them go the full five rounds?
I do think it's going to be Barber, because I do think that if you're looking at Blanchfield, you know, she's somebody that is, you know, if she gets the takedowns and she gets that top control, I do think that there's opportunity for that finish. If she can really implement that wrestling, the way I look at it, really, it's going to be a sprawl and brawl. It's going to be having Barber defending the takedowns, you know, pushing forward, maybe keeping Blanchfield on that back foot, and Barber's going to be able to move forward. So I think that the longer this fight goes, I think that means that you're going to see Barber finding success, landing better shots, and really point fighting and winning on the scorecards.
Now, Kyle, I know the main card fights get all of the attention, it seems like, whenever we're talking about just who's going to win and what's going to happen here. But you can bet on every single fight on the card, and you're heading to the prelims for the feature prelim for your next bet.
Yeah, so the other one here we have is Alan Nascimento versus Jafel Filho. And you've got this number here. It's kind of interesting here where this line opened up minus 120 for Nascimento. This line got up to around minus 165. And now you're seeing a big buyback come in. I did actually have Filho at the plus 130 number here. We're seeing around plus 115, plus 100 we're even seeing now. So a big sweep coming back here. But, you know, Nascimento, why I think he was the favorite is because he does have some good jiu-jitsu. You know, when he gets this fight to the ground, he's very lethal, you know, smooth transitions, opportunistic submission game. And just he does have that opportunity. But with that being said, there are a lot of red flags here on the Nascimento side. And I think the first one that's as clear as day that anyone who's going to talk about this fight will talk about is the fact that he has not been active in the cage. He just hasn't been seeing it. His last fight was back in January 14th of 2023. So you're talking like 2.5 years, he has not been active overall. And I think that's a very, very bad sign. Also, you add in the fact that not only did he have, you know, a fight back at, you know, in 2023, but he had four scheduled fights and pulled out of three of those. Now, it's always hard to get the information on, you know, is he ill? Is he sick? Is there an injury? What that is. But pulling out that much is not that good of a look overall. And then you also add in that he's 2-2 in the UFC. And he had his UFC debut back in 2018. So you're talking now, he's been in the UFC for about 7 years, had four fights, not very active. And now he's coming back after a long layoff. I think this is just a very tough setup for him overall. And you look at, you know, Jafel, you know, he's a guy that is high pace guy, better striker. And the biggest, you know, advantage for Nascimento is pretty much going to be his grappling and his jujitsu. And that actually, I think that, you know, Filho can nullify some of that. I think he can actually kind of, you know, be able to beat him at that game. But if the fight does play out with the feet, I think he's the far better striker between the two. Plus, you got to add in that, you know, Jafel is 3-1 in the UFC. And his only loss was to an absolute beast in Muhammad Makhachev, who's undefeated, and he almost finished Makhachev. So I think there's a lot to like here. I agree with this line movement here. You know, you're still getting a plus number here. I still think there's value there.
Another undercard fight here. We've got Chaisson taking Vieira here, and Macy Chaisson starting to take some money as well. It's minus 120 when you put it in earlier today. It's up to minus 130 now. You like Chaisson in this spot?
Yeah, you know, there was a point when Caitlin came into the UFC, I was pretty big on her. You know, I thought that she had a lot of ability. You know, she kind of did a lot of things that like Amanda Nunes did. I know that's, you know, a little bit of a stretch there, but did a lot of great things, have some power, could move forward, look for takedowns. And, you know, she was, you know, she came in 4-0, you know, beat Sarah McMahon. She beat Kat Zingano. So she was starting to build a name there. And then all of a sudden she gets knocked out in the first round by Irene Aldana, a very bad knockout for her. And since then, really things have changed for her. I don't really see the same tenacity that she has had in the past there. She's 4-4 since then. All four of those wins, kind of suspect overall. I mean, she did beat, you know, some aged out vets that do have names, you know, so that kind of helped her there. You know, Misha Tate, Holly Holm, even the Holly Holm fight, I thought was, you know, not the greatest look, holding her up against the fence, you know, keeping her there. It was more a positional win than anything here. And the more interesting part is the fact that over the four wins that she had recently, she was outstruck on all of them. You know, some of them were pretty close, but either way, she was outstruck. It was the takedowns that really helped her get the victory and positionally win. And I think Macy is big. She's got a big frame for the division. She's 5-2 on a 5-2 run in the UFC. Her only losses were against also Irene Aldana, but she was beating Aldana and ended up getting finished in the third round. And even Raquel Pennington, she was beating her and got finished. So I do think there's a lot of good, you know, ability to her overall. If it plays out on the feet, I think that Caitlin is very slow, very plodding. You know, her hooks are very slow. And I think that the 4-inch reach advantage for Chaisson is going to really help her with the straight shots down the middle. And she could probably probably implement her own takedowns as well. So I do like Macy here. I think that it is a rightful side. And again, I agree with that line movement here.
Kyle, we got about 30 seconds. Next week, we got the rematch between Sean O'Malley and Merab Dvalishvili. This is all the way up to minus 325 in favor of Merab, plus 260 on O'Malley. Just surface thoughts here on this one.
Yeah, you know, I definitely think this is going to be another Merab spot. I mean, I think it's just stylistically a nightmare for O'Malley. I actually did bet pretty heavy on Merab in that first fight. The odds have definitely changed since then, but I do think that he probably keeps getting the takedowns, and I would lean towards it probably being on the scorecards.
He is Kyle Anthony. Find his work over at Wager Talk, also over on MSG at Kyle Anthony UFC on the Twitter machine. Kyle, appreciate it, and good luck, buddy.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Yeah, I was on Merab pretty big in that first fight as well. I don't know if I can get there at minus 325. I mean, the odds have really shifted since that first one. Hour number three when we come back.